Broads Media.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome on in to Schmooze. Today we have a fantastic guest, Jeff Mosher of Inside the Birds podcast. What's up, dude? What's going on?
What up, man? I'm excited to schmooze with you. That's schmoozing is like my one of my pastimes, man. It's my you know favorite thing to do. So let's do it.
You know, I'm not gonna lie to you. I wanted to be different with the name Schmooze. The more and more I dive deep into, you know, what it's all about, this and that, I don't even know if it makes sense, but we're just rocking with it now that we're 5-6 episodes in or so. Just going with it.
When I think of schmoozing, to be honest with you, I think of like the you know, Steve Summers in New York at WFAN. He's got that voice, and he calls his show the Smooze Show, and it's very unlike yours in that he's very mellow and laid back. He's literally schmoozing, and you're all like, ah! So, you know, screamed would probably be a better, more at least apropos title. But I think schmoozed works in the context of we're going to be talking sports and it's going to be schmoozing.
Yeah, no doubt. And we'll do plenty of screaming about the Eagles, I'm sure. But real quick, before we dive into that, we text every night about the Phillies and the bullpen. And we're recording this Wednesday night. So this is going to be recorded before we see this last game against the Brewers. But I need to get your thoughts on Aaron Nola's curveball, no bite last night. And, you know, this Phillies team, I'll tell you what. But here's the thing, Mosh. Two and a half games back of the division, 2 games back of the wild card, they're involved.
Does it feel a little bit like with the Eagles last year, no matter how bad it looked, it wasn't really until, like, I don't know, week 14 that they were officially eliminated. I remember going into December and people were like, you know what? This thing has been a train wreck, but they're only a game behind Washington or a game behind New York, or and the whole division stinks. At the end of the day, it's like, does it matter if the team stinks and they make the playoffs and get its butt kicked? No, I don't think these Phillies don't stink. They're clearly just maddeningly inconsistent. They've got some guys, obviously Bryce Harper has been having a great year and Zach Wheeler. So they keep you invested, I'll tell you that. But I've never been so, I guess, frustrated with a team that's technically a winning team, although that could change in 3 days anyway. But
this is how low the bar is, Mosh. I'm at the point now where the Phillies have been involved in that August vibe over the last handful of years, but then they just plummeted insanely. The fact that they're holding on and there won't be a plummet is my positive grab if I'm looking at the trajectory of a timeline, which means next year we might be seeing some playoff baseball.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you, all right, so we might see playoff baseball here this year. I mean, we may back into it. It may be ugly, but you know what? It's been 9 years since we've seen playoff baseball here. Is it even longer? I can't even remember
it's
now.
We're coming up on what, 10 years, I
ten,
think?
Yeah,
ten
coming
years?
Up on it. Right. I mean, I'm old. I'm getting old, man. I can't believe it's been a decade of no playoff baseball here. And I need to say, so at this point, I don't even care if it's not a great team or if they're inconsistent. Give me a little bit of October baseball and give me something to believe in. As the great 80s band, who was that once said, give me something to, is that Poison? Give me something to believe in.
That's not up my alley. I'm all in on this Kanye West, Donda, and Drake debate right now. So I'm in a different mindset in the music game.
I got you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm right. Assuming you didn't give it a whirl.
You know what, man? I've tried. Like, it's weird because I grew up on, I love hip hop, but like I grew up on the, you know, the Rakims, the Tribe Called Quest, Mos Defs, and you know, Biggie, Pac. I don't like get with today's hip hop. It just doesn't resonate with me. It doesn't vibe. You know, I know Drake and Kanye are still from technically my generation, but I kind of feel like they helped change how the sound is and. It's not to me for better. So
yeah, no, that's fair. Look, hey,
I'll be outside running, listening to like Big L. You know,
I know you do too. I can do that. Yep, I can do it all for sure. All of it's entertaining, and even maybe the Eagles this year. Let's dive into it. How about that for a little transition? All right,
you are a segue king.
Let's start with the head coach here because nobody knows what to expect from the head coach. In the beginning, it was all crazy with the media. Now it seems people are buying into it and all. Since you were around training camp and all that, I just want to know what you saw from him, the vibe during practice, how active he is. You know, what did you see from Nick Sirianni over the first training camp?
Yeah, we got an interesting breed of, I think, first-year coaches this year. I mean, you go to Detroit over there, and Dan Campbell, like, from day one is talking about eating people's kneecaps, right, and doing some crazy old things.
You can't be saying that as I'm taking a sip of my coffee. It almost came out my nose.
I timed that up perfectly, brother.
It's amazing.
And Nick Sirianni did not come off that way, but certainly in practice, like, he's very animated. He's very intense, but not on the side of, like, so intense that he only takes himself too seriously. He's just being a coach. And I thought he's done a nice job this training camp of coaching his players. And when I say coaching your players, you know, it's not just like do that better, do this better. It's literally stopping practice when something goes wrong, taking the players who did something wrong, not just admonishing them, but specifically for him and quarterbacks or offensive players, but getting into the technique that they're supposed to be doing, especially with these wide receivers, right? And explaining to them exactly what he's looking for and what they should be doing. That's coaching. And also coaching your coaches. I've seen him look at his coaches when something has gone wrong with that face that suggests that those coaches better get it right the next time. So I think you've got to be happy so far in that regard, where we know with the last staff, talent development and coaching the coaches was not exactly the staff's strong point. So you hope with this staff, it's a little better. I think really interestingly that you bring this up, Hunter, because on our Inside the Birds platform, we have a show, as you know, with Quentin Michael and Jason Avant, two former Eagles. And they spent a few minutes in their most recent episode talking about what they hope for with Nick Sirianni. And they both have played for different coaches and some first-year coaches. And both of them said that the team takes on the identity of the head coach. So what they hope for at Nick Sirianni is, no matter what happens on Sunday against Atlanta, it's that you stay the same, you be who you are. Because if you're an up-and-down type of guy, you're only happy when things are good and you're a wreck to be around when things are bad, then your team is going to take on that personality. So what they want from Nick Sirianni is for him to be himself through thick and through thin and let the players gravitate toward that kind of an identity.
Yeah, no, I like that. You know what? Something I've always been thinking about here as I stare at the ceiling at night with a new puppy that just howls at the moon every 2 hours and it's absolutely insanity. I think about, what is Nick Sirianni going to be like if he wins game one? Is he going to be in there with a big smile looking at, you know, all these media members? Or, you know, is he going to be depressed? Like, he wears his emotions on his sleeve, which is a good thing. He's a very, you know, active guy and all that with his facial expressions and all. What an idiot. But, right. Yeah, I say yeah, that because, well, of course, that's what I do. But
of course. Yeah. With Doug, we knew when he was happy, everybody got ice cream. Like, that was the thing. Ice cream for everybody. Ice cream, ice cream, ice cream. With Nick, what we know about him so far is that he loves to talk, and sometimes a little bit too much, but whatever, that's who he is. So I can see, you know, a big win over Atlanta week one, him coming out in the press conference, and it's going to be like War and Peace trying to transcribe that thing. He's just going to go on and on and on and on. But what's important is, how is he in the locker? I listen, you never want the team to lose, but what I'm looking forward to at some point this season is, what is his demeanor like after a loss, specifically maybe a close loss, field goal, division loss, home loss? You know, you're never allowed to lose at home here. And what does that do to him, and how is he in the locker room, and how does he respond to that? And then how does the team respond to his response?
Yeah, no, I agree with you there, because as much as I couldn't stand Doug P, you know, that locker room played hard. And I will say, I wonder – I have to respect Doug in that regard, even though, you know, you can talk about the scheme and how ugly it got, not rolling Carson to the right and all that stuff. But how much of when we praised Doug Peterson for keeping the locker room together, was it Doug Peterson or was it Lane Johnson, Jason Kelce, Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, you know, these guys that are still in the room now? And I don't want to take anything away from Doug. We'll never know that answer. But I do wonder about the locker room side of things, because there are vets that give it their max when you have two wins or whether you have eight wins throughout a certain stretch of a season. And will you see that same buy-in level just because, you know, when you step into that locker room, you have those level of leaders in the room that won't even allow it to slip regardless who the head coach is?
Yeah, well, you hit that right on the head. My experience in talking with a lot of coaches around the league, when they became first-year coaches, they felt that one of the first things that they had to do was to win over the locker room leaders, the veterans, the guys who are holdovers from a prior regime but are already entrenched in their roles on the team, right? Those are the guys who are looking at the new head coach, and it's a little bit of a cat and mouse. Like, yeah, you're the head coach. We've been here. We've been through the thick and thin already, you know? And some of these guys can look at Nick Sirianni and say, we've won a Super Bowl. You have not even called a play in the NFL yet. So I think buy-in from the veterans for Nick Sirianni is really the most important thing. And that's pretty common for first-year coaches from just talking to a lot of guys in the league on how they felt like they had to adapt to their new environment. So to answer your question, I think it was a hand-in-hand thing. I think Doug understood that pretty early, and he's a player's coach anyway. And, you know, he started that leadership council thing. He gave a good voice to guys like Malcolm Jenkins and Brandon Graham and Chris Long and other guys who are on the team, and that helped his acclimate. It helped foster a good communicative relationship between the two. And I think it's fair to say, until the roof caved in last year, for the most part, Doug's teams always fought hard for him, even when the backs were against the wall, especially when their backs were against the wall in like 2017, 18, and 19.
Yeah, no, it seemed like every single year that happened. 4-6, 5-7, let's dig ourselves out of it. You know, it's just not a recipe for success, although they kept doing it. How about the addition, though, of Jim Bob Cooter? How about this? First off, the way Nick Sirianni just randomly threw that in there as if nobody's going to, I don't know, dissect this a little bit more, just, hey, casually throwing in there. Is there a lot, though, to look at with Jim Bob Cooter? I mean, originally, by the way, saying his name is just hysterical, but I will say I'm losing my train of thought. Oh, yeah, Caldwell. Early on in the whole process of bringing in some veterans, you know, that was a name that stood out to me throughout the process of looking at coaches. Mm-hmm. This doesn't scream that level, but it does somewhat fit that category of someone to lean on if you need some help as a young staff. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree. To the level that he leans on Jim Bob Cooter, I you know, remains to be seen, but it does sort of meet halfway that kind of concept that a first-year head coach would surround himself with a senior assistant. You see that fairly often in the league. And Adam Kaplan and I thought that, and we had heard that Nick Sirianni was looking into that idea, and we were speculating guys who he'd been with from either San Diego, like a Wiz and Hunt or a Mike McCoy, who I think was around at a training camp a few times. We thought that you might see that. You have not. Jim Bob Cooter's not really been a head coach, but he has been an offensive coordinator, and he is a pretty good name in the league.
You know what? The Lions actually won 9 games those years with him as OC. So it's not as if there's a lot of success in Detroit. And was Schwartzy a part of that as well?
I believe he was. That's right.
Hey, I'm a Schwartz guy.
There you go. So look, the shock to me is that he didn't even mention Jim Bob Cooter until like a recent press conference. And if I were Jim Bob Cooter's employer in an NFL team and I was in front of the microphone, I don't know. I'd probably try to mention Jim Bob Cooter's name at least 5 times a press conference, because Jim Bob Cooter is the greatest name in all of the NFL right now, especially among coaches. So I would have looked forward to the opportunity to just constantly name drop Jim Bob Cooter just for the sake of name dropping Jim Bob Cooter, because why wouldn't you?
I actually had to think about it when I was on the radio over the weekend. Can I say it? Do I say it? You know, it's just like funny. But you know,
there's nothing dirty about it. It's just his name.
I know. It's just funny. But with John Dorsey, they did the same thing last year where behind the scenes, is that an Eagles being sneaky thing, or is that normal business around the NFL where you keep things inside and we just don't like it because, well, there's a lot of fans that just don't like how Howie and Jeffrey Lurie operate at the moment.
Yeah, it's not. Well, I would separate the coaching from the personnel, but I would say if you're going to bring people in who have a name, just be communicative with your staff that this person is being brought in to fill or occupy this role in particular. He's not stepping on your toes. He's not stepping on your toes. Jim Bob Cooter is here to be a senior assistant and to do projects. That's not something that we have, right? John Dorsey is here to specifically evaluate these kind of players or give his past insider experience, and that is it. If you start bringing guys in and you don't tell people you're bringing them in, and then they find out through the media, or they find out, or they're starting to wonder what the guy's being brought in for, which I've heard some has happened at times, that's when you're not exactly being on the up and up. But I think if as long as you have a defined role and explain it to everybody, there's no problem with it. It's a good thing usually to have experienced voices in your room.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, let's continue on with the offensive side here with the quarterback. I want to know, because we had this discussion on the radio about one area of Jalen Hurts that you're looking forward to seeing him grow. And I said accuracy because he was 52% completion percentage. Everyone screamed out how bad Carson Wentz was throwing the ball accuracy-wise. He was 57. So Jalen Hurts was even worse. We heard some answers of turnovers, make sure you limit the turnovers, reading through progressions a little bit smoother. So if I asked you, Mosh, what would your answer be?
Yeah, well, first of all, with accuracy, I don't think either Carson Wentz or Jalen Hurts, is an inaccurate quarterback because of last year's statistics. I think last year was just a function of a terrible offense, quarterbacks constantly under duress. Jalen Hurts was pretty much told to throw the ball away instead of taking hits. So some of those incompletions were intentional, so to speak.
Right.
If you give these guys a pocket, they're going to hit their passes 9 times out of 10. That's just the way the league is, these days. I think what you want to see is kind of that repetitive accuracy on many throws against many different coverages. So, accuracy can be boiled down. It could be a big picture thing. It could be a little picture thing. I think with Jalen Hurts, what we've seen in very limited doses so far, going back to even last year when he came in against Green Bay, is that he's really good at knowing when and where the blitz is coming from when they blitz him. If you remember, one of his first passes against Green Bay was that 55-yarder to Jalen Reagor on the left side. The Packers were bringing a nickel cornerback blitz. He read it, saw it, threw it to a spot. I think he's really good at that, predetermining where to go based on the defense. The problem is you're not going to get blitzed all the time. Blitzing can be great if you block it up because it leaves all these one-on-one situations. The Steelers did that to Jalen a lot in that preseason game, the only time we saw Hurts really on the field. The Steelers came after him. So you saw one-on-ones with Goddard. You saw one-on-ones with Zach Ertz caught one. Jalen Reagor dropped one. So that was good to see. You saw Jalen Hurts in one-on-one situations put the ball where not only his receivers could catch it, but get yards after the catch. What we didn't get to see is how does Jalen Hurts do against soft zone, right? When a team is just going to rush 4 and drop 7 and make those windows tighter and they've got a good enough front 4 to come get you, kind of like the Eagles did under Schwartz, that's what I'm really looking forward to seeing. Is he able to, with feeling that front 4 pressure, still be able to pick apart, that 7-man defensive backfield that it's going to be? It's going to be the linebackers dropping and the cornerbacks and safeties. That is, I think, the big challenge for him. I'm not sure we're going to see that on Sunday, because I don't think the Falcons have a good front 4 rush. So they may have to feel they got to mix it up. They may feel they need to blitz to try to get Jalen a little rattled, because they really only have about one really good pass rusher in Grady Jarrett. But as you go along and see when they play Tampa, when they play Kansas City, teams that can really bring it with the front 4, we're going to see what Jalen Hurts can do against those softer zones.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. And I know that this is the way too early question, but after the Super Bowl is over, that same night, there's an article up that says the way too early Super Bowl predictions of next year. I'm going to hit you with one right now with Jalen Hurts. Way too early Jalen Hurts conversation.
Oh, I thought you were about to tell me Jalen Hurts is going to be in the Super Bowl.
That would be nice, though. But no, if in terms of the way too early assessment, before we even see a regular season snap, just based off of, projections on what he can be, do you think he's the quarterback of next year? Do you think that he can have a season good enough where the Eagles think, all right, let's use these assets in the draft instead of on a quarterback, on help and assets to build around Jalen Hurts? Way too early.
You asked me two different questions there. I don't know if you realized it. First,
okay,
you said,
You
said, do I think Jalen Hurts will be the quarterback beyond this year? And then you said, do you think he can show this team that, the franchise that he should be? Can he? Absolutely. I mean, I think he has a good skill set. I think he's got a good supporting cast around him. And if he can get better and better each week and show what he's got that potential, sure, absolutely he can. Will he? at this point, if I say yes or no, what does it matter? The only thing this can be do is held against me in a court of public opinion when all is said and done.
Right? Well, you kind of are going down what I want to do here. I want to make sure I clip it, I cut it, I save it so I can just rip you halfway through the season.
Opportunity.
Oh, come on.
Look, that's amazing. I mean, you have to be fair about this, right? He was a player who was the league viewed as a third to fourth round pick. The Eagles even were pretty candid about why they picked him in the second round, because they wanted a cost-efficient backup quarterback. He's a starting quarterback now. He's not a cost-efficient backup, and he is someone that the rest of the league thought was a third or a fourth round pick. But even when you call him a second round pick, Hunter, if I gave you a list of the last 10 quarterbacks picked in the second round, it's not very encouraging, right? I mean, usually if you're going to be a starting quarterback worth his salt in this NFL, you're picked in the top 10 to 15 picks of the draft, if not the top five. Listen, there's always, Derek Carr's a starting quarterback. He was a second-round pick. Colin Kaepernick was a second-round pick. He went to the Super Bowl. There are certain guys starting in the league, right, and Dak Prescott, who are not even first- or second-round picks. But the majority – go look at how many starting quarterbacks are in the NFL this year. How many of them are pretty good? Most of them came in the first 10 to 15 picks of the draft. So the odds are against Jalen Hurts. About being a guy who the team is going to look at and say, this guy can win us a championship. I mean, those second rounders, you can find like Geno Smith, you can find Seneca Wallace, you can find Deshaun Kaiser. Like, it's not an encouraging list, to be honest with you. And I know what he did in college. A lot of people like to talk about that, but all those guys I mentioned had great college careers too. So we see.
So your answer
has an opportunity.
Is no. All right, I got you on the record.
My answer is, it's more, if you're a statistical person, it's more likely that he's not than he is. But you can never underestimate intangibles, leadership. He certainly has all of that.
Okay, so bringing up statistics, would you rather have someone on third base and one out, or someone on second base with no outs and bunting Bryce Harper? Folks, I lost my damn mind about this topic. I still get boiled thinking about it. I need to know your answer. I had,
I'm going to choose A. Right?
No, you're being a douche. That's what you're doing. You're being a douche.
Wait, you said third base and one out, right? Compared to second base and what again?
Zero outs.
Zero outs. Yeah, I'd rather have third base and one out. Sorry.
No, I'm done. I'm going to shut things off here. With all jokes aside, though, we do have some more to get into. I do want you, though, to give an opportunity to tell the people about what's happening at Inside the Birds. Pre-game show, right? All that good stuff. So as we enter football season, what's going on at ITB?
Oh, man, a lot of things are going on. So, of course, the Inside the Birds podcast with myself and Adam Kaplan, that will drop every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 6 a.m. We haven't really officially announced it yet, but I'll kind of drop it on this show. It's been going on. The show that I mentioned before with Quentin Michael and Jason Avant is going to carry through to the season, to the Super Bowl. So they're with us long term. So we'll always look forward. They've been coming out at Wednesday at 6 a.m. I think we're going to move them to Tuesday at 6 a.m. So their show is great. I encourage everybody to check it out. Two guys who played the game and take you behind the scenes of what it was like to play and what they know goes on behind the scenes at the NovaCare Complex is excellent. And, of course, we'll have our year two of our Sunday pregame show. We call it Inside the Birds Pregame Live. We'll be doing that from Rivers Casino. So really excited about that. Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. till noon, pretty much every Sunday that there's a 1 o'clock or 4 o'clock game. And then obviously the night games will start at 5 p.m. But that's going to be myself, Adam, Greg Cosell, who'll be back for year two, and Jason Avant and Quentin Michael will be a big part of the show as well.
Beautiful. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I obviously tune in all the time, producing all the shows. I have all the information down below in the description. So all that, the links and all that will be in the bio for Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, you name it. It's awesome. It's good stuff.
I appreciate that. Also, I want to remind people to check out InsideTheBirds.com because we've been rebuilding that website. It's going to be an even better content producer than it is now. And please subscribe, if you can, to InsideTheBirds.com. We may have another show or two coming as well. We're diligently working down to the deadline here to bring on more people to deliver the great content that we do at Inside the Birds.
Awesome. Yeah. So I accept. Thank you for asking me on the show to now posting fantastic content and me screaming every single day. Now,
you're too big, man. We can't afford you.
Now, all jokes aside, I'm really looking forward to all the good stuff. Football is literally, well, tomorrow we get, I guess when this drops, it'll be today, but you get the Dallas Cowboys. Oh, man, the star. Ooh, you hate the star. It's going to be fun. But all right, let's dive back right into the Eagles side of things here with Zach Ertz. The 180 emotionally with the with the organization. Your thoughts on how that whole thing kind of played out?
I got to admit, and people get annoyed for media for being skeptical sometimes, but how can you not be? I mean, he did not speak at all during the preseason, right? And all of a sudden the 53 comes out. He's still here. No move was made, and he sits down in front of the cameras and it's like, I love the Eagles. I want to be an Eagle forever. Look, I thought he was honest when he said bygones be bygones or the past is in the past. I think that was Zach's way of basically saying, I can't control what I can't control. I can't trade myself, right? And he even mentioned that the team had stood firm on the value for him. So he's got to respect that. So I understand. I thought it seemed a little overboard about I want to be an Eagle for life or I love it here because I'm still – what I didn't hear from Zach, and I would love to have been able to ask a question at the time, but does that mean he is now no longer requested to be traded? And on the same vein, has the team told him that they will not trade him under any circumstances now? Because he sort of made it seem that way. I love it here. I want to be here for the long term. But if another team loses a tight end in the season, is Zach Ertz and wants to give the Eagles, a third round pick for Zach Ertz, are they going to say no?
Well, not to interject here, but I'm pretty sure it was Matt Lombardo who wrote that about Dallas Goedert and Minnesota and possibly something there. If that was to be the case, who's to say that maybe it's not Goedert that's the one that might be thrown out there to see what compensation could be in return?
Well, I was aware of that report. I will tell you from my own reporting I had heard Minnesota made a call about Eagles tight ends. I don't know that it was just Dallas Goedert's name that came up. It might have been, you've got tight ends, let's talk, right?
Right, right.
So I know that report was specifically on Goedert. I think that would be kind of not – I wouldn't understand that move because no matter what, Zach Ertz has 1 year left on his deal this year and he's done, and Dallas Goedert – was drafted in the second round. He's a guy, who has, I don't want to say boundless potential, but pretty good potential to be a Zach Ertz or better like tight end in this league. So why would you trade Dallas Goedert? Then you have Zach Ertz's contract expire at the end of the year and you're at ground zero when it comes to tight ends, unless you think Jack Stoll or the kid Tyree Jackson are going to be ready by next year to be a starting tight end. That to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense, nor does it, in my personal opinion, to have Zach Ertz here at $8.5 million. I mean, the team has talked about financial responsibility and why did we take Jalen Hurts in the second round? Because the price of a backup quarterback had gotten so exorbitantly high, we wanted cost control there. Okay, but you're going to pay Zach Ertz $8.5 million to be a rotational tight end. How does that compute? So some of this stuff doesn't make sense to me. It's probably good for Jalen Hurts and maybe good for the offense, especially with some of the uncertainty at wide receiver, but from a team planning and roster architecture standpoint, there's a lot I really don't get about this. So if Howie Roseman doesn't want to trade Zach Ertz because he's not happy with the offers that he's getting, which that's my speculation, he's not happy with the offers, right? He wants more. What is he expecting in return now? Because now Zach Ertz is on your team. If he has a decent year, catches, 35, 40 balls or something, and leaves in free agency, he's not going to sign a super mega contract, right? He's still 31-year-old tight end at that point. So it's not like you're going to get a comp pick any higher than the fourth or fifth round. And that only works if you don't go out and get a big free agent yourself, because if you do, then it's neutralized. So I'm wondering what offer would you deem normal and acceptable here that you're weighing keeping him on the team for?
Yeah, maybe they do look at it from the Jalen Hurts aspect of let's give this guy every opportunity to succeed, and having Zach Ertz on this team, if we're not going to get something that makes us overwhelmed at all, having him is better than not having him if we're trying to learn on the fly with this younger quarterback. But, you still have Dallas Goedert. You still have names out there that can help out. And, we always talked about under Doug Peterson, the 12 personnel compared to having maybe three wide receivers out there. Would you anticipate that I don't know. Would you think maybe they're going to go heavier 12 personnel this year under Nick Sirianni than we thought before Zach Ertz was claiming that he's going to return happily?
I don't know, because I get the sense that this coaching staff really wants to develop their wide receivers. They've got Devontae Smith. You've got Jalen Reagor. You've got Quez Watkins, who had a nice camp. You still have Ward. I mean, they're keeping some of the guys they cut on the practice squad. I would imagine, just based on what we've seen from Nick Sirianni as an offensive coordinator and other teams, that and what we heard about him, you know, wanting to throw to running backs and things like that, that he would like to be a more of a three-wide type of team. And I think 12 personnel can help you when you're in the red zone. You want to get some bigger bodies on, and certainly if you get injuries at wide receiver, it can help you. But you're a different kind of offense when you're predominantly 12 personnel. You're much more of a methodical, deliberate. I mean, Doug Peterson had to be that way in 18 and 19 because of injuries, but it's not the way he wanted to be. It was right. The way he had to be. So I think I would also say this, Hunter, it might be beneficial to Jalen Hurts, but also, is it worth whatever kind of setback you have for Dallas Goedert here? Because we saw firsthand what kind of impact on Travis Fulgham it was to have Alshon Jeffrey kind of shoehorned into the rotation when he got back.
Let me go psychopath, really diving deep into this. Maybe it's really not that much. I don't know why I explained it that way. But knowing the whole contract situation's happening with Dallas Goedert, seeing the type of money getting thrown around the tight ends, is it possible they want to limit Dallas Goedert so then when it comes to a payday, it's maybe not as much as it could have been if he was logging in more percentage of the snaps, or am I reaching too much?
I doubt it, because at the end of the day, if you're Dallas Goedert and you're that good and you have a good enough year in a rotational role that you know you're just going to go into free agency and be one of the top playmakers in free agency and get projection. A lot of money.
Yeah, projection-wise, yeah. Too, you can project, I guess, that he could double what he did if he was starting kind of thing.
Look at what Austin Hooper made in free agency. It was last offseason, right? When he signed with the Browns from Atlanta, he made $11 million a year. And at that time, that was the top money for a tight end free agency. Now, since that happened, George Kittle re-signed, Travis Kelce re-signed. Obviously, Kittle reset the market in $15.5 million. Dallas Goedert's not getting $15.5 million. But I'm sure someone told Austin Hooper one day, you're not going to reset the tight end market. And he reset the tight end market. And Dallas Goedert, I think, is better than Austin Hooper. So will he get $15.5 million like George Kittle as a free agent? Probably not. Would he get 14? Maybe. I mean, teams were going to have a lot more cap space next year when the cap goes back up. So I don't think that that's something that the Eagles are thinking of, like trying to limit a guy. That can only backfire in the end.
All right, well, since we're on the topic of tight ends, I do want to get your thoughts on Richard Rodgers being cut. Now, you know, he's the veteran, and maybe there was some financial reason on what they can do down the road with him and whatnot, but he had a good season last year, and I also wonder, and maybe I'm going crazy, is it possible that the tight end position, and I am basing this off of how you slotted Richard Rodgers in there and there was some sort of production, is tight end becoming sort of a position where with running back, you can plug and play guys off the street, this and that. Like, I know they're getting big money and they're becoming more of an emphasis in offenses, but when I see Richard Rodgers grab that amount of yards last year with that offense that struggled, is it starting to become a position where, you know, maybe it's a little bit easier to slot guys in because of the way the offenses are built?
I think it's that if you're a tight end who can block even just a little bit, there's always going to be a home for you. Jack Stoll is a guy who made the 53 as a rookie free agent out of Nebraska. And he's almost like an H-back. He can block, he can catch, he can do everything. If there's an opportunity, if you're either, yes, you are seeing teams, as the Eagles are doing with Tyree Jackson, scour like former other positions like quarterback or the college basketball level. Some teams are doing that as well for athletes who can play tight end, who can be good big targets and pass catchers. But if you're like Richard Rodgers, whose only real, you know, bugaboo in the NFL is he's been hurt when he was with the Packers, but he's caught some big, he caught like one of the Hail Marys from Aaron Rodgers. He's always been a good, reliable pass catcher and an adequate blocker. And if you can block at that position in this league, 9 times out of 10, you're going to find a home.
Yeah. Well, then does it surprise you that he was released the way that he was based off of last year? Or do you see the upside in Stoll and with, as you mentioned, Jackson, who got banged up in practice, that's clearly going to limit him this season. But does that come to a surprise?
I only thought Rodgers was perfect for the team because I did not anticipate Zach Ertz being on the 53, right? You're not going to carry more than three tight ends. And if your first two are Goddard and Ertz, then you can use that third spot. It's going to be a special team spot. It's going to be a developmental spot. And that's more of a Jack Stoll than a 28 or 29-year-old, I think, Richard Rodgers. Maybe he's 30 now. Either way, the point is that third tight end spot is always going to be young, developmental, special teams. If Zach Ertz were not on the 53 man, I would have thought that your three would have been Goddard, Richard Rodgers, Stoll.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then this is where I want to leave things off, and it might not be a happy thought, but as a Penn State's man that you are, and look at that. You got the shirt. You're repping. Miles Sanders. I'm actually a little concerned about the whole dropping the passes and the fumbling issue. I just feel, while he'll give you an 80-yard home run hit, and you can just keep pounding them, and he'll get you some chunk yards throughout and all. Part of the Miles Sanders experience is always going to be, to some level, dropping passes, no matter how much he works on it. And I don't know, does that limit Nick Sirianni? Do you have to take him off the field to utilize Gainwell? Is that a bad thing? Is that a good thing? I don't know. I'm just a little worried about Miles Sanders from that aspect. I don't know if it's ever going to change. It's just part of who he is, sort of like with Alec Boehm. He'll never be a great defender. It's always going to be a part of who he is in his game, even when the power does turn around with his bat. So that's how I feel about Sanders. I'm just curious where you are with him.
Well, I would say that I thought he caught the ball really well as a rookie. I didn't feel like he was an unreliable pass catcher until last year, which is just year two for him. But on the flip side, I thought last year he didn't get enough credit for really becoming not just a dynamic runner, but a power runner. He converted a lot of short yardage situations. He had some goal line touchdowns or within the five. So I thought he really improved as his vision and his just overall, like, how quickly he hits the hole and goes as a runner. He obviously needs to get the catching thing squared away. And your concern is fair because this training camp, he's really struggled with it at times. But I will say I've seen him working on it. So it might be, like you're saying with Alec Boehm, something that no matter how much work you put into, you just don't get it back.
I've seen Ben Simmons shoot jump shots every summer in the gym.
Exactly. Exactly. Can you imagine, like, off-season highlight videos of Miles Sanders doing nothing but, like, one-handed Odell Beckham-style catches? Right? No, I think the weird thing for him is he seems to catch the deep ball better, you know, and Quentin Michael brought this up to me. He said, you know, sometimes running backs will catch those balls better than the ones across the middle or the dump offs, because when you're catching those deep balls, you're behind the defense. You're not worried about getting hit. Just catch the ball and run. When you're across the middle or out in the flats, you get that ball, especially last year when things weren't great and Carson would just bam, you throw it at somebody and they're just getting nailed, whether it was Deshaun, whether it was Jalen or any of the running backs, right? So maybe it's that thing where he's just got to have the confidence to catch the ball and absorb the hit. But you are correct in this. If he does not do a better job catching the ball, he's going to lose snaps to Kenneth Gainwell, who's an amazing route runner and pass catcher, or even Boston Scott. I mean, this team has not made a secret about how much they want to throw the ball, and they've got some good weapons – throw the ball to running backs, and they've got good weapons aside from Miles Sanders to be able to do that. But how great would it be for the team, the offense in general, and Miles, for him to just be able to shore up that one part of the game and really turn into a three-down running back who can beat you in a multitude of ways? I know some fantasy football owners who would be very, very happy about that.
But, I love that you brought that up, because we'll kind of throw things we'll kind of end things here. But I stated that I will never take Miles Sanders again because I've been hurt. I've been hurt, and I know Doug Peterson didn't run the ball a lot. This year, I'm expecting more of that. I will not take him. Guess who I took?
Ever?
Guess who I took?
You took Miles Sanders.
I took Miles Sanders.
RB1 or RB2?
I got him in the fourth round. I took him. I just forget the path I went, because I think wide receivers, I got DeAndre Hopkins in there, and I had some picks earlier than that, but
three picks before him, he would probably be your RB2, I would think.
Yeah, no, it was Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Hopkins, okay. And then we ended up going Tyler Lockett, Miles Sanders. That's how it went.
See, that's, I think, the fair compromise, is that as a rookie, not too many people drafted him or maybe had him as RB2 or flex. Then after his rookie year, people vaulted him up to a top 5 running back, top 10, and he was RB1 for a lot of people. Now, after last year, I think RB2 is a safe space for Miles Sanders.
Better
not
remember
that offensive line, my friend. And the threat of a running quarterback is going to help opening up things too. So even if he does drop a few passes, he still should be out there getting yards.
This optimism is just fantastic to end things on. Mosh, thank you so much, dude. We'll be in touch probably five other times today because we communicate. But thank you, Mosh. I appreciate it.
Yeah. No problem. Good schmoozing with you.
Thank you. Take care. See you guys.